Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hey, and welcome back, everybody. Glad that you're here with us for another exciting episode. We're going to get right into it with my partner, Doug Goldstein, here in a second. But have you ever wondered first if there were a way to capitalize on all that online chatter that millions of investors have on social media? Well, your wait's over because the same artificial intelligence techniques that some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds use, that's now at your fingertips and you can make their edge your edge. It's called the Buzz Index. It's licensed to an exchange-traded fund trading under ticker symbol BUZ and provides investors with a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of investor sentiment online. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. We'll have more on the Buzz Index later, but right now, let's head to my partner here at the Money Tree Podcast, Doug Goldstein.
Okay, I'm very excited to be talking with Rich Chechen, who is the president of Asset Strategies International. Today, we're going to be talking about something that Rich is a real expert in, which is, of course, my namesake, the commodity of gold. Now, Rich, you know, people talk about it all the time. There are a million different ways of owning it. But the bottom line is, why should someone invest in gold?
That's a great question. It's often misunderstood. The main reason that we sell gold, the main reason we feel people ought to own gold is as wealth insurance. You know, you have insurance on your home, your car, your health. What do you have for your portfolio to protect it in bad times? And, you know, for us, gold is a store of purchasing power in a liquid form for a potential financial crisis you hope you never have.
Okay, so say that again, because I want to ask you a question about each one of those.
Gold is a store of purchasing power in a liquid form for a potential financial crisis you hope you never have.
Okay, so let's start with the first one. It's a store of purchasing power. That implies, based on what you're saying, that it actually somehow keeps you ahead of inflation. Is that really true?
It is really true. And, you know, if you look at the performance of gold versus the dollar, because that's how we tend to measure it worldwide, it's a commodity. You look at gold's rise in value versus the dollar's demise in purchasing power over the years. I think since the creation of the Fed, the dollar's purchasing power has dropped about 96-97%, depending who you talk to. Gold's actually, it looks like it's appreciated if you look at a chart, but what's really happening is the measuring stick, the dollar, has gotten smaller. So it takes more of those dollars to buy an ounce of gold.
So if we're thinking, and as I'm remembering back when gold was a higher price in the past, you know, all along there's been inflation. So explain it to me again. In other words, if the price of gold isn't actually going up on a regular basis the way inflation is going up, how is it that the decrease in the value of the dollar really matters to us?
Well, the dollar's purchasing power has weakened over time, and I believe that's due to mismanagement. You go back centuries, you look at any empire and the currencies they had, eventually they get to the point where interests get in the way of probably good fiscal decisions, and they make decisions where they spend more than they have. That lessens the value of each dollar or each euro or whatever it is in your pocket. So the dollar is losing purchasing power over time. If you look at a chart of gold and the dollar since the Fed was created, it's very clear right about the time we came off the gold standard, that's when gold was unshackled and it shot up or appreciated in dollar terms. And it's really because we lost fiscal responsibility. We lost that governor on our decisions, and the dollar has lost purchasing power from that point forward. It's pretty dramatic if you look at the charts.
All right, so let's look at the next point that you made. As you said, that gold was a rather liquid investment. Now, I know you're not talking about melting it down and actually moving around with liquid gold, but I assume what that means.
You could do that, but I don't recommend it.
Yeah, that would be a hot day, right? But what I assume you mean is it's something that you can take a bar of gold or a couple of coins and you can go somewhere and do something with it because it's actually a valuable currency that people are willing to work with. I have to tell you, that's not my experience. What do you mean by it? It's a liquid kind of investment?
You can find a market for it to buy and sell anywhere in the world. Plain and simple.
Anywhere in the world, okay.
Yeah, it's basically wealth that can move across borders. It's not subject to government controls, et cetera, for the most part. Anywhere you go, somebody will recognize the value of what you're holding in your hand, and you'll be able to exchange it for the local currency, your goods and services, et cetera. That's what we mean by liquidity. Now, there are more or less liquid forms of gold, clearly. Depending on what your purpose of the gold is, would dictate how you would own it, where you might store it, these things.
We're speaking with Rich Chekin, who's the president of Asset Strategies International. He's been in the gold business for decades. He's been talking to us, A, about why buy gold, explaining how it can be a protection against inflation. Next question was, how liquid is it? And Rich, one of the things you brought up is it's something that you can literally go across the planet and people know what gold is all about. So let me share with you my story and tell me what I've done wrong.
Okay.
Recently, we were going through my parents' stuff and, you know, like everyone, you found a gold chain here or a trinket there that looked kind of gold-like. And we thought, okay, this is pretty good. You know, we filled a box, but it was a small envelope, and said, let's go to a dealer who can sell gold. So this was complicated. It wasn't liquid is when someone gives you $100 and you can move it from here to there. Dealing with this was complex. So now we have to go to a store, and the guy says, looks at it, he goes, well, that's not gold, and that's not gold. And so as a consumer, I don't really know what gold is. And then at the end of the day, he goes, all right, I'll give you $125. What do I know, right? I have no idea what this stuff was worth, and it's frustrating. So I took my money and I took my $125 and gave him the trinkets. So I have no idea. So that does not feel liquid to me. Now, maybe I had a bad experience and it works better for other people, but what are you referring to?
Well, you know, one way of owning gold is through jewelry. Many folks around the world feel that they don't trust governments, they don't trust banks, and they rather wear their wealth, if you will. That's a great way of storing purchasing power. And in those markets where that's common, it's fairly liquid to do so. In more modern economies, I could tell you that the most liquid form of ownership is going to be government-issued coins or bars minted by major refineries. If you go to a jeweler, a precious metals dealer, even a pawn shop, most anywhere around the world, they're going to recognize the value and they'll give you good value. Now, you do want to make sure that you know what you have before you go in there. With jewelry, it's hard because sometimes it's, you know, 24 karat, 22 karat, 14 karat. You have to kind of know what you have going in to know that you're getting fair value compared to the gold price. Within a pure gold coin, a pure gold bar, it's clear. Whatever the gold price is, that's what it is.
Let's go into this clear thing, because as a guy on the street who wants to maybe own some gold, I have no idea what the purity really is. I don't know what the markup is going to be. You know, you go to a pawn shop and he says, oh, yeah, I got a beautiful gold coin minted by the U.S. government. And he says, okay, I'll give you X percent below the price per ounce or however it works. I don't really know what I'm dealing with. How do I get past that so it actually becomes a useful currency?
First thing is know who you're working with. I would recommend working with a dealer that actually looks out for their clients that want long-term relationships, not a one-off trade. You know, I don't want to disparage the whole industry, but let's face it, pawn shops is probably not where you're going to get your top dollar for a gold coin or a gold bar. If you go to a reputable precious metals dealer, someone like ourselves, you will get treated fairly. You'll get good value for your metal. I could tell you many gold coins issued by government mints are actually selling at above the spot price, and that's what they'll pay you because that's what it's worth.
Why is it worth more than spot? Is that just because it's artwork? You're saying the coin is worth more because it's beautiful or something?
No, there is some value to the minted form. The fact that it is liquid and recognizable is got some value to the dealer. They'll actually put a couple percent above that when they sell it to someone. So, you know, they make their living on the spreads, but they're going to be fair both to whoever they're selling it to and whoever they're buying it from. And that only happens when somebody cares about you and therefore the long-term relationship and a long-term business model.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's go to the next point you made, which I thought was also very interesting, was that gold is something that could be used in time of a crisis. When I imagine a crisis, and maybe I'm a bit of a doomsdayer sometimes, is, you know, I imagine there's going to be some war and people, currency systems aren't going to work and the internet's going to go down. And, you know, here I am with a bunch of gold coins. Are you imagining that I would go to the local market and, you know, flip a coin to the guy and he'll give me a chicken? Is that really what you mean by a crisis?
Not necessarily, although I will tell you, that's happened. I mean, if you look throughout history, I mean, there's countless people that escaped, for instance, Nazi Germany with British sovereigns sewn in the hem of their clothes. That's how they were able to transport their wealth across borders and start anew elsewhere. When my uncle and his partner started in this business in the 70s, they worked with the Vietnam refugees coming from South Vietnam, and those folks that had gold were able to start a new life in a new place. So it could be that, but reality, I don't see us bartering for a loaf of bread with a gold coin.
All right.
If you have a financial crisis, if you have a medical emergency, you can cash it in, you could take care of what's on the table, and then go back and replenish your emergency stash, if you will.
So the crisis that you're referring to presumably is something more like when the stock market crashes, people rush to gold?
Absolutely. A lot of times you'll see that. Gold will sell off. It did when, say, AIG and Bear Stearns collapsed because people had to meet margin calls. One of the most liquid investments in their portfolio was gold. They sold it, met the margin calls, and then started replenishing and building up. It was one of the first markets to recover.
All right. Hey, Rich, I have a whole string of other questions for you, but I see we are just about out of time. So tell me in the last few seconds, how can people learn more about you and follow your work?
It's very simple. If you're stateside in the U.S., toll-free number 1-800-831-0007. You can get us anywhere worldwide on the internet at www.assetstrategies.com.
Okay, we'll put a link to that at the show notes of today's show. Rich Chekin, thanks so much for taking the time.
Wonderful to be here. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks a lot, Doug, for the fantastic interview. Well, before we get to our roundtable discussion, if you've ever wondered if there were a way to take advantage of all that chatter you see on Twitter, Facebook, wherever you hang out online, guess what? You can use the same artificial intelligence techniques used by some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, and you can make their edge your edge. It's called the Buzz Index. It's licensed to an exchange-traded fund, trades under ticker symbol BUZ, and provides investors with a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. There's no surveys. There's no guessing. Here's what the Buzz Index does. First, Buzz targets the most mentioned large cap U.S. stocks across the social media landscape. The more active the conversation about a position is, the greater the reliability of the buzz. Each of the most mentioned stocks is then given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics. And the 75 stocks that have the most bullish scores each month, those get included in the index. Invest in the wisdom of the crowd. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. Quick disclaimer, I use the Buzz Index in my portfolio. Doesn't make it right for you, but just need to tell you that that I use it. And I also need to tell you that fantastic interview today with my friend, who we'll reintroduce here, Mr. Doug Goldstein.
How you doing there, Joe Salcihi? Thanks so much.
I am fantastic, man. Great, great time talking gold today.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
gold in your podcast.
There's gold in them podcasts. They're actually the golden podcasters here on the Money Tree Podcast, not just Joe Salcihi, but I think I see across the table from me, Miranda Markwood. How you doing, Miranda?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. I'm over my colds, feeling good. I got the new year thing going. Yeah, let's do this.
And how about you, Linda P. Jones? What's your feeling? Are you feeling golden today?
I'm feeling golden. You betcha.
Mm-hmm. You guys remember that TV show, The Golden Girls?
I do.
I don't actually remember it, but I wonder if we could do like a version.
Linda's like, where the hell are you going with that?
I don't know. I'm just thinking, huh? Joe and I could.
I said, Linda's like, where the hell are you going with that? With the Golden Girls. I'm wondering where the hell you're going with that.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the question that I was wondering about because, man, I actually never watched the TV show, so I don't even know anything about it.
It was very funny.
Was it? Well, it's kind of like your generation, wasn't it, Joe?
Very good. Let's move on.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll start with Miranda, who's not heckling me at all. Miranda, you are the type of person who really believes in diversification, and there are a gazillion different things that people can diversify into. Do you think that gold is one of those things that people should have a substantial or any amount of in their portfolios?
Yeah. So once again, it goes back to what are your goals? What are your fear? Yeah, like, what do you think about the future and everything else? I don't think having gold is a terrible thing. I wouldn't put everything in gold, obviously, but I think if you just really feel that gold is a solid, hard money kind of thing for you to keep in your portfolio, I think it can make sense to have up to 5-7% of your portfolio in gold. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I recently, a little less than a year ago, Joe and I were part of that investing challenge thing. And one of the things I did was I made a portfolio that included 25% gold ETFs. I finally got rid of that and I did end up, you know, coming out ahead on it and it was great. But 25% in gold was a bit rich for my blood. And especially since gold is like any other asset. I mean, we like to say, oh, it has intrinsic value. But let's be honest, gold is like any other asset. It goes up and down with market perception. It's only as valuable as what people are willing to pay for it. And once again, when you're stuck in an economic crisis, nobody can afford your gold anyway. You know, you're going to be better off with your food storage and your water storage and your fishing tackle. So, I mean, I was going to say bullets, yeah. But, you know,
ammo and whatever. Guns,
but I don't think there's anything wrong with having a little gold in your portfolio if it's something that would make you feel more comfortable with an asset that is probably a little bit more decoupled from the stock and bond market.
I'm not sure if you're hedging yourself by saying it's not a terrible thing to have, because it's not really the same thing as saying you should definitely go out and get some. But I want to focus, Linda, maybe you can talk to us a little bit about this idea of what does it mean that something has intrinsic value? Because the gold bugs certainly tell you that unlike dollars or any other fiat currency that we see, gold is a real thing. It has intrinsic value. What do you make of that?
Well, I guess we could say gold was the first Bitcoin in a way, because by that I mean it was globally accepted. So it had intrinsic value because people felt that it had worth, and it has worth because it has some degree of rarity. And they say that all the gold that's ever been mined in the world wouldn't fit 4 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So there is a limited supply, a rarity, a certain amount that is hard to expand, unlike cryptocurrency, which actually doesn't have a limited supply. So I kind of laugh actually when people say Bitcoin is like gold, because it's nothing like gold.
Technically speaking, they say they're going to only make a limited number of Bitcoins is what they say. So supposedly we'll get to a point where there'll be no more new Bitcoins mined.
And I get that, but the problem is there's other cryptocurrencies that are being mined. So if Bitcoin was the one,
that
would be great, but there's so many other initial coin offerings, you know, that supply is becoming tremendous. But back to gold, I just think that what I meant was that gold was exchangeable across country lines and worldwide, that people would accept it. They would use it as currency. They would, you know, years ago after Bretton Woods, it was tied to the dollar, was tied to gold, and then the other currencies were tied to the dollar. So everything was supposed to have a very fixed limit. And then when in 1971, when Nixon took us off the dollar, off the gold fix, it basically allowed for us to print money without limit. And that's sort of what happened after the crisis in 2008, when we really started going crazy with creating more money.
Mm-hmm. Joe, tell me how you see this, because Linda said something very interesting. She actually described gold as the first Bitcoin. So that kind of sounds like a great quote to put up somewhere. Do you see them as a similar type of situation, or are they really very, very different?
The only way that they're similar is that there's very little data except for other people's interest, right? I mean, gold doesn't have a utility outside of jewelry, so it's not like nickel or copper. You don't use it in manufacturing very often. The only game that you're playing with gold is the hotness game. And I always groan when I hear people that say that they're getting into gold because they feel like it's safer than the stock market. When Walter Updegrave recently did a story where he talked about how gold is 8 times more volatile than the stock market is. And so if you don't like the gyrations of the stock market, you're not going to like the gyrations in gold. And, you know, and we're seeing with cryptocurrencies too, that's the same, right? Theirs is for different reasons, because it's so young and so volatile, and there's some fear of missing out going on, I think, by a lot of investors. So people are rushing in and they don't know what they're in. So then they're dumping, and we're seeing these huge gyrations, very similar to what we will see and what we historically have seen in precious metals. So to Miranda's point, you know, 5% in your portfolio. Yeah, okay, I get it. Because it, you know, the zero correlation to the stock market is the exciting part for me.
Based on your answer, I'm not getting the feeling that you see gold as a particularly reasonable inflation hedge, like Rich was telling us.
Well, over long periods of time, gold maintains its value, right? There's only so much of it. So that over long, long periods of time, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
what does that mean to maintain its value? I mean, an ounce of gold is worth an ounce of gold. But if you're comparing it against other things like the dollar, which is the currency we all use, does that really mean it's maintaining its value? Because sometimes it's a lot of dollars and sometimes it's a few dollars.
I think the point that a lot of people make about the purchasing power of gold is that back, let's say in the 1800s, a gold coin would buy a nice suit and a couple of dinners. Now at, you know, the price of gold, it would still buy a very nice suit and some dinner. So the point is that it maintains its purchasing power, and it is very volatile, but I think of it as a sector choice. I don't think of it as a main asset class. I think of it as a sector choice in that 10% of your portfolio where you can put in some interesting things. I think gold is an interesting asset to put there because, like, for example, in 2008, when the market tanked 38% in the S&P 500, gold was up 4% that year. And it was the only asset that was up positive other than treasury. So I think, you know, there is a place in a time of crisis. I don't really see it as much as of an inflation hedge as in a crisis type situation or a cycle type investment, because I'm old enough to remember being young back in the 80s when, you know, gold peaked in 1980 and what was going on in the 70s when we had high inflation. Someday we may see that again, because I think that travels in cycles as well.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, if you were going to be buying gold because you thought there was going to be some sort of major financial crisis, I know that generally you like to buy things in the form of an ETF. There certainly are index funds that follow gold. But if you were doing it as a crisis hedge, how would you buy it?
Okay. So first of all, once again, as we all know, if I think the economy is going to complete crap and our money system as we know it is going to fall apart, I think gold is probably down on the list of things that are useful. But, you know, I mean, it's nice to say, oh, it retains its purchasing power. Yet nobody wants to give you their food in exchange for your gold bar. But no, if I was going to be using it as kind of a store of value or a way to kind of, you know, be there in a crisis, then yeah, I mean, it does make sense to either get like paper gold, like certificate gold, or even get a little, you know, physical gold, some coins, some bars. I think silver, if you think that gold is a little too expensive, silver is not a bad way to go. Silver often follows along the lines of gold. And in a situation like that, silver may not be a bad thing to have because it does have some of that value and it costs less, so you can get more of it. But yeah, I mean, if you seriously think that gold is going to be the answer to some financial crisis, it might not work as well with the ETFs and you may want to do something like get some physical gold. But once again, we all know, I think it's not that useful in a situation where everything goes to pot. It's just not going to be that useful.
Well, pot might be a good commodity, but that's for probably a different episode.
Exactly.
You know, I don't think gold has to be just talked about in times of crisis. I mean, I think that people miss that, you know, from 2000 to 2012, gold actually compounded at 18% a year versus the Dow at 10%. So there are cycle times and times when gold's in favor and actually doing extremely well.
Yeah, and when we're talking about those kinds of situations, I think having an ETF is just fine as well, because, I mean, you're still going to capture you're going to capture those kinds of gains, right? You're still going to see that. It's going to be, you know, part of your portfolio, and it's going to help protect against some of those losses that you might see.
Joe, yeah. Miranda was using gold and then she kind of switched to silver, and it made it sound as though, well, you could use this or you could use that. On the one hand, that sounds reasonable because they're both valuable metal commodities. On the other hand, the people who really trade in these things, they'll go from one to the other because they think there's value between one or the other. Do you see that there's some sort of real difference between it, or is this just another way to trade a non-correlated commodity?
No, I think there can be real differences between them, especially when you look at manufacturing and technology and some of the roles some of these metals play there. So if you want to do the deep dive, you know, you can invest in just nickel or just copper or something like that. But, you know, for 99% of people listening to this, if you're going to have a precious metals position, you're doing one of two things. Number one, you're using it for that piece of the portfolio that doesn't correlate with the stock market. So you're putting it in there as a diversifier at maybe 5% of your portfolio. And I've seen a lot of portfolios that have worked really well that way. Or number two, you're putting it in your bomb shelter in the basement for when the zombie apocalypse happens. So you're doing one of those two things. You're really not using it. You know, we're not looking at nickel or copper as the hot thing that I'm investing in so that I make a ton of money over the next 5 years.
Linda, a lot of times here on the show, we like to quote Warren Buffett because he's kind of a hero to some people out there on Wall Street. And he
Warren
has
who?
This guy, you know, Bezos. He's the one who competes in the billionaire club. And he's often been quoted as saying pretty negative things about gold. And one of the things that he always likes to point out is that unlike a company where the company actually produces something and makes stuff and sells it and generates profit, you know, he says if you take gold, and I think it's his funny quote, you pay a lot of money to people to dig it up in one country. You pay a lot of money to people to bring it to another country. You pay them a lot of money to dig it into a hole in the ground. And then you pay them to guard it for you. And there's no dividend.
Uh-huh.
In this case, we're not really following the Warren Buffett model, are we?
No. I mean, I can't remember who said it, but was it J.P. Morgan or was it one of the Federal Reserve who said, gold is money and nothing else is? I can't remember. But anyway, there's that quote. I think it's interesting, you know, what's happening right now. I mean, Warren talks about gold being an old relic and all of that. But what's happening right now is that China is actually coming out with the petro yuan, which is backed by gold. And this is coming out this month in January of 2017. It is
2018.
I'm sorry.
and yes, it was JP Morgan.
JP Morgan. Okay. Thank you. So China is bringing out the petro yuan to try to encourage countries to trade their oil in yuan, because for a long time, the dollar had an advantage by being the one that was used for oil, and they could not, no other country could use any other currency except the dollar. And so with the printing and the creation of so much more money, and by the way, we talk about purchasing power, and the dollar has lost, as your guest Rich said, 97% of its purchasing power since, I think, 1913. So for gold to maintain purchasing power and the dollar to lose it is a huge difference. But it's interesting that at this time in history that China wants to come out with an oil futures contract, a gold-backed futures contract in oil that will entice countries to, they hope, buy their oil from them and not use the dollar. So very interesting dynamic that's happening right now that involves gold.
Mm-hmm. That would certainly be a major overhaul into the way that oil is traded. I'm sort of wondering if it's actually going to be successful in the end of the day, but I guess we're going to have to see that.
I think it's interesting because if you have a currency that's paper, that's backed by nothing, you have the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. I get that. And a lot of that is because of the strength of our military, actually. But then you get something that's actually backed by a physical asset that is in limited supply. I think that there's an interesting dynamic there that obviously is going to appeal to certain countries.
All right. Well, we will keep an eye on that, but I think that I'm keeping an eye on the clock now. We're just about out of time, but let's go around and see.
Can I actually jump in with one last thing, Doug?
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I love what he said about dealing with reputable dealers. I'm a guy that historically I've worked with some dealers, and it's funny when you get some of the reputable people around and they tell the stories about people that go to shysters. There's groups that come into town. They'll do a song and dance dinner or something. And man, a lot of the time you really have to watch out who you work with. So I was really happy when your guest talked about that reputable coin dealer who's been there for a long, long time.
Yeah, that was definitely my experience that I was telling him about. Although I'm not sure that I was taking advantage of it, just might have actually been that what I had wasn't really valuable. My concern was just that you own things and you don't really know what it is. In fact, if you look at the prospectus for some of the gold ETFs, and these gold ETFs are companies that own more gold than anyone in the world, it says in like the little footnote somewhere, it says, by the way, we cannot guarantee that all of the gold that we have in the vault backing up this ETF is actually 100% kosher. They don't actually use that word. But the point is that when tons of gold are moved from here to there, it's very hard to verify it all the time. And they specifically disclaim responsibility if it turns out that the actual gold that's inside the fund is problematic. Of course, they figure no one's ever going to know, because I don't think you can really go to the vault and say, I want to see my bar of gold that I own in this ETF.
Right. I just keep all my money in Beanie Babies for that reason.
Lock your door.
Well, they had to do that because remember the tungsten bars that were coated in gold, and they determined that they weren't the right weight. They didn't weigh the same as gold. And that's how they determined that they tested them and they weren't pure gold. But most of the dealers are going to give you coins that come directly from the mint in an uncirculated package. So you have some security that it is mm-hmm. pure.
All right. So watch out for that. All right, let's wrap it up today. Let's see what's going on with everyone here. Miranda, tell me what is going on in your world.
Yeah, so head on over to plantingmoneyseeds.com. Check out my massive post on how to create a financial plan this year. It has great tips and ideas on how you can go through and create a financial plan that actually works for you and will help you this year in 2018. So head on over to Planting Money Seeds to get a look at that.
Fantastic. And Joe Saul-Sehy, what's on in the basement?
We have some exciting shows coming up. Candace Marie is somebody who worked for in two different jobs, got laid off, like a lot of people have been laid off, and just clawed her way to success and paid off $39,000 in debt while not having consistent income. And it's a great story about when you set a goal and you really, really, really want it, like getting out of debt, she made it happen. So that's on Stacking Benjamins.
Fantastic. It's nice to know that people can really succeed. And someone else who has really succeeded is Linda P. Jones. What's going on?
Well, I like to talk about some of the performance from 2017. Now I'm in the right year using 2017 numbers and what happened. And a lot of people in their 401k plan, for example, have some of the largest ETFs. And so I go through what is the performance of some of those large ETFs and some of the global equity sector funds, diversified stocks, et cetera, of performance for last year. So you can check that out at Be Wealthy and Smart. How about Goldstein on Gelt? What's going on there?
At Goldstein on Gelt, I recently interviewed Harold Ivensky, who's kind of a big player. He was sort of a longtime Wall Street guy that when I was starting 25 years ago, we used to read a lot of his stuff. And he spoke about how financial planning can deal with the worst case scenarios. It's always easy at times when the market is going up to think about how much money you're going to make and what you're going to do with it. But you have to take time to figure out what you're going to do if the market goes down or just doesn't work out well for you. And that was the interview had at GoldsteinOnGelt.com.
I love that guy, Doug. Dina Katz, who is his business partner, she wrote the book on practice management, just like the definitive book on running a financial planning practice that was, mine is all dog-eared. So can't wait to hear it.
Neat. Actually, on the interview he did with me, he offered a few copies of his new book. So if people listen to the interview, they'll find out how to get it at GoldsteinOnGelt.com. That about wraps it up for us today. Miranda, take it away.
Make sure you subscribe to us using Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Google Play. And every single week, we will deliver a fresh new episode to the device of your choice. So don't forget to check that out. And make sure you go to MoneyTreePodcast.com to see all of our past episodes, listen to them, and also get access to resources and the other projects we are working on so that you can learn more about managing your money and your investments. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do, so invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at MoneyTreePodcast.com for more free investing resources.